Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and thank you for joining us at This Week with Dr. T, our weekly program on current events. All podcasts are all week long are at 11 a.m., and they are there with no expiration and no limits. You can catch every episode anytime that you have time to watch them. By now, we hope that you've joined our Tenpenny Prime membership. We have a topical white paper, a recorded presentation that's put together by me that's brand new information every month that hasn't been out there before. And then on the last Wednesday night of the month, we have a live Ask the Expert call it's free. It's part of your membership as a Tenpenny Prime member. And then other people can join us if they want to buy a ticket. We hope that this mix of free and membership content is really going to deliver you a place of knowledge, empowerment, and action for this entire year. If you're already a member, thank you so much for supporting us. If you aren't a member yet and you would like to become a member, go to shoptenpenny.net, shoptenpenny.net, click on the membership tab and you can read all about it and hopefully join there on a monthly basis or for an annual fee. So with that, before introducing you today's special monthly guest, Twyla Braze, president and co-founder of Citizen Council for Health Freedom, we're going to take a short break. She's got some incredible updates. You won't want to miss this. We'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Twyla Braze is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, a patient-centered, policy-focused organization established in Minnesota more than 20 years ago to protect the patient-doctor freedom. Her efforts have led to amazing results, including the development of the Wedge of Health Freedom and the Patient Toolbox, easy-to-use tools to help patients understand their options in coercive medical situations and maintain control over their treatment decisions. On an even broader scale, Twyla's Health Freedom Minute is heard by more than 5 million listeners on more than 870 radio stations in 48 states. Amid all that she does, she is the author of an 8-time award-winning book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Medical Records. Written in 2018, it is more important and more timely now than ever. Twyla, welcome back again. I am so grateful every time that I see you, and I'm so glad you join us monthly, but it marks the time and how fast the time is going. It seems like I just talked to you yesterday.
Yeah, well, it's great to be here, and I'm glad to come every month because healthcare changes regularly.
Yeah, and we get this out for a lot of people for their updates. You know, when you were here the last time, you were talking about that Citizens Council for Health Freedom had become a member of a state attorney general's organization to talk about the Real ID, and you were just getting ready to go to that meeting. How did that go? How was it received? And what did all these attorney generals say when you presented this information?
Well, I think it went well. It was fun to try and figure out within the conference, you know, who they were and to spend a little bit of time just getting to know them as people. Before we gave our presentation, then we gave our presentation to about 19 of them, plus there were staffers from 6 other AGs that couldn't make it. So, you know, we had only 15 minutes to present our case, actually even less because we had to leave time for Q&A. And you could tell that they were very interested. They were looking at the packets that we provided for them, and then they asked questions. And they asked questions basically, you know, have you had a legal analysis done of this? And of course, we have not had a legal analysis, but we will get one. And, you know, we found out in the process that there are two AGs, at least, that don't have their own real IDs because they don't want the real IDs.
Wow.
And at the end of it, we heard that of all the presentations that they heard, because different organizations come and give them presentations, of all the presentations that they heard, ours was one of the few that they were excited about. And so once we get the legal analysis done and get it to them, hopefully that will move the needle where it needs to go.
Will you also submit that legal analysis to like Pam Bondi and up the chain to the FBI and hopefully get it to Trump?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this is that we sent our letter to President Trump, and somebody in the Trump administration sent it to the TSA to respond.
Oh, gosh.
Which makes me believe that President Trump has no idea about this issue, has never saw our letter whatsoever. And I don't even know how far up it went. You know, it just could have been whoever gets his correspondence just sends it over to the TSA and says, we're not going to bother anybody, you know, actually within the White House about this. And so we used that letter from the TSA and did a redlined correction for the masses and put it out on social media and sent it out to the press and just to see, you know, who would pick it up. Because the fact of the matter is there were things that, you know, that wasn't true, you know, that weren't true that the TSA said and made claims about. And so, you know, we just redlined it and put it online and said, basically we disagree and you're wrong about this, that, and the other thing. So I don't think Trump knows yet.
That would be a very interesting letter to include with your legal analysis, sending to all those state AGs, you know, that our own government doesn't know what they're talking about. And they have bad information and they don't know, or they don't know what they're talking about and they're just giving out information. But either way, our state attorney generals need to know about this.
Well, the Real ID office, in looking at some of the leadership, including the guy who signed the letter, right? He didn't even date the letter. That was kind of interesting. But the guy who signed the letter and apparently wrote it, we spent a little time looking in his office to see, you know, what was there. It has a very different name. It doesn't say Real ID office. But the head of the office that he's a part of with a very long name the head of that office is a biometrics proponent. So the woman that heads it up, whose name I can't remember at this very moment, she goes out and gives presentations about the biometrics and cataloging people's the geometry of their face and their fingerprints and all of this kind of thing is, you know, the way forward. But of course, it isn't. And so, you know, the office that is leading the charge toward Real ID is who responded. And of course, they basically, you know, said we were wrong about everything. So.
And the Department of Homeland Security, are they issuing any more cute little videos like what we saw a while back?
Well, I'd say no, but I know that you don't know about the newest one that I found. And so I'll just talk about that. So you might recall that April 11th, she said that you wouldn't be able to travel if you arrived at the airport without a real ID on May 7th. Right. And then on May 6th, so about, 3 or 4 weeks, you know, before the deadline, right, she said that. And then on May 6th, the day before that deadline, she testified to Congress that, oh, no, people who come with their standard state driver's license would be able to travel, just that they would go through a little bit more security. So they would meet their travel itinerary. That's her words. And so then the next day, she put out an Instagram with the words today in all caps. So on May 7th, the so-called deadline, right? She said, today, if you come to the airport without a real ID, you won't be able to fly.
So does that mean she perjured herself and lied to Congress?
I don't know. She would probably say no, because that happened, you know, the next day, right? It's really kind of incredible because this is the Trump administration. A lot of people are trusting the Trump administration, but you know, she's a bureaucrat's bureaucrat, right? She's using fear and force and everything else to try to get people to give up their constitutional rights, and it's terrible. It's just terrible.
Well, that's kind of what North Dakota said about her too. Their Congress did a lot to keep her in check, the way I understand it.
South Dakota.
Or South Dakota. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a real problem when you've got people inside of government giving out wrong information,
I know. I
and they're
did
not held
talk.
accountable.
Oh, sorry.
And
I
they're
did
not
talk.
held accountable, not at all.
Right. So
You
I
know.
did talk to South Dakota people, legislators,
Oh, yeah. And
and I said I heard that maybe Kristi Noem wasn't as conservative as we all thought, and they said, yeah, you know that thing about not shutting down the state? She wanted to shut down the state, but the House wouldn't let her. I
oh, wow.
was like, oh, okay. So she says that she didn't shut down the state, but now we know that, and these were legislators telling me, right? So. Yeah, it's not as you've heard.
Or C, actually. Excuse me. You were also at Freedom Fest and you gave two breakout sessions. Oh, excuse me. Two breakout sessions, Real ID, The Danger of the Digital National ID, and 10 Ways to Get Government Out of Healthcare for Good. You also took part in a mock stage trial with the pharmaceutical industry with Dell Bigtree and Robert Malone. Tell us about some of those conversations. I wish I could have been there. I was speaking at in four different locations in Texas that weekend, or I would have been there. So tell us how was Freedom Fest, and tell us about your breakout sessions and that mock trial with Dell.
Yeah, so the mock trial was perhaps the highlight, plus the fact that we had a opportunity to meet Brett Weinstein of the Dark Horse podcast, and then did an interview to be aired soon, I believe. Those are the highlights. The Real ID was always fun because people think that they know what they know about Real ID, and it's not true. And so, you know, I got some people who stood up and said, you know, but we need it for illegals, or we need it for this, or they've got all the data anyway. And so I had the opportunity to talk about how that's not true, and that when you think about Real ID, you have to think about internal passport. They're creating an internal passport for all travel transactions and access in this country. That's where this thing is going, the whole social credit system, right? And you can't be thinking about whether they have the data or they don't have the data. And what I like to tell people is, if they're pushing for something, they don't have it. So do not believe that they have all the data. Even if they had the data, they don't have a way to put it together. And this is the way they're going to put it together. But not only about, it's not really about the data. It's about the control that they're going to have as a result of having everybody in an internal passport that's digitized and biometrically controlled. Think less about the privacy per se, and think more about giving up all of your rights because of the kind of data they're going to get after they have you in an internal passport, and then they impose things on you. And I like to say, you know, if we had a Harris administration or an AOC administration, right, they would probably use a digital biometric controlled internal passport, a federal ID, to keep you in your 15-minute cities and to tax you whenever you left, right?
Wow.
Carbon taxes for when you left, because you know you're using up all of this energy and polluting the climate is what they would say. And as long as they have it digitized, they'll know where you are. So this is not, I mean, people got to start thinking a little bit differently here.
I
Now,
spoke at three locations over the last couple of days, and we talked about this just ever so briefly. But I said, do you realize that if you don't have a real ID or one of these other, like a military ID, and there's a whole list of them that are available, but truthfully, most people don't qualify for them. The only other thing that they really qualify for is a passport. And I said, do you realize if you don't have a real ID, you have to use a passport to fly from Tampa to Chicago, inside of our own country, which has always been historically where you went to other countries. But now we're having to do this inside. What's next? Are they going to have border patrol for all streets, that all roads, that, and there only be main thoroughways, and some of the secondary streets will be shut down as you go from, say, Ohio to Indiana, or from Ohio to Pennsylvania? Or they're going to be toll booths there, that they're going to set up toll booths that you have to show all these IDs? Because you're absolutely right. It's about absolutely controlling everywhere we go and everything we do. And I hadn't thought about that, about outside of the 15-minute cities, but that's even more spooky.
Yeah, you know, it was Thomas Massie who said that you will not know what their plans are for this until everybody has it. And of course, that's our big thing, is to make sure everybody doesn't have it. And so our call to that audience, and our, we had a display booth as well, our call to that audience and the people who came to our booth who were curious about our position on Real ID, we said, you know, if you don't have a Real ID, don't get one, and get a passport so you feel comfortable, right? And a passport card. But so if you don't have a Real ID, don't get one. If you do have a Real ID, get rid of it. Because we need to change the trajectory, and we, the American people, can actually do this. We don't actually need the states or the attorney generals, but my concern is that the DM, I mean, but that would be much quicker, right? But the people, by simply refusing, can change the trajectory. But my concern is that these DMVs who have gone rogue for so many years, when, for instance, the states had passed laws prohibiting any compliance with the Federal Real ID Act, right? Any. But the Real ID office of five people in Homeland Security in D.C., they discovered that they could work directly with the state DMVs, just forgo the legislature and the governor's office. And so these DMVs were willing to violate their own state laws and take money and move the entire ID system up to Real ID compliance, or 95% of the way there. So I believe that the DMVs are more than willing to go rogue. And so some of these states where people are trying to switch and the DMVs are saying, yeah, nope, you can't do it, right? 45 states, their laws let people have whichever one they want. And these DMVs have gone rogue and said, nope, we're only going to issue Real IDs. And so so we're going to be doing a list of the laws and rules so that people can find out what their laws and rules actually say and bring it in and help. But lots of the states, it's really easy. In California, somebody came back and said, easy peasy. And some of the states that get questions, like, I don't remember what the state was, Michigan maybe, where the person said, so I don't want to be nosy, but just kind of curious, why do you want to make the switch? And then the person just looked at her, and then she just said, you know, I don't want it. And she said, so you don't want the federal ID. I was like, no, that's interesting. The DMV called it the federal ID.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So my question is, and we've talked about this, you know, over the last few months when this topic has come up. And you said, if you have a Real ID and you want to get rid of it, are you already in their database as having a Real ID? And how do you get out of that?
So this is sort of aligns with what I was saying before, is you've got to get past the data issue.
Okay.
So you gave your information that they require, the additional information that they require to get the Real ID. So your identification, your primary identification documents. Now, a state could definitely get rid of that by forcing them, requiring them to dump that stuff from their database. But the bigger question and the bigger objective here is to stop the Real ID from getting imposed across the country. So you've already gave that up. Maybe you'll be able to get that deleted from the database. Maybe you won't. But the whole idea here is that we stop them from being able to do what we want to do. And we just have to get the numbers to go higher in the direction of non-compliance.
You know, maybe when the states start passing laws that say that in our state, you know, like Tennessee is already, either they've done it or they've been working on it. to say, you know, real IDs are not required for travel here. You know, our citizens do not have to have a real ID. You know, it's maybe it's kind of like the opt-in and the opt-out system of the of vaccine exemptions. You know, I haven't looked at this in a long time, but I remember in the state of Texas, when a baby was born, you were automatically opted into this vaccine tracking system, and it was illegal. And you had to, it wasn't that you actually had to actually do it. It wasn't an automatic thing. And then you could have the option to opt in or opt out. And if you opt in, many times they put opt out. If many times they put you in it anyways. And I remember Dawn Richardson from NVIC. She used to, you know, she lived in Austin, and she said at least twice a year, she would go down to the state health department and force them to dump their databases, because not only were they putting your vaccine record in saying you were automatically opting into the system, they were also putting the parents' names, the social security numbers, credit card numbers, all sorts of things into these databases illegally. And they had to have their feet held to the fire to force them to dump those databases. Maybe that's going to be, you know, phase two after we get, you know, get these state attorney generals and these states to say, no, we're not going to have a national tracking ID. Is somehow we have to figure out a way to police that, that if people want to opt out, that they actually get to opt out.
Well, having teeth, and by the way, it shouldn't be opting out. It should always be, because that's dissent. That is you dissenting, right? Which means you have to figure it out. Then you have to figure out what to do to get yourself out. Then you have to do all of the work. And meanwhile, they have claimed a right to you, a right to your data. They don't have a right. And so it has to be an opt-in, which is consent rather than dissent, right? And so so everything should be, in a free country, everything should be with consent, not with dissent. And I like to tell people that the way you can think about this in a more tangible way, perhaps, is that if you have, you've got your bike in front of your house, right? And then the government comes by and takes it. And they're like, and you're like, well, what happened to my bike? Then you figure out that they've got some kind of government bike pickup program. If you leave your bike out there for more than, we'll just say 6 hours, right? And so then you have to go pick it up. First, you have to figure out what happened. Then you have to go pick it up. Then you have to make sure you never leave your bike out for 6 hours. But what if your 6 hours and their 6 hours are different? Then maybe you can never leave it out, because you're never sure if they pick it up. Because you see, the government has claimed that your property is theirs unless you stop them from getting it, or you later object and then get it back. And that is not a free government, a government that claims your property is their own unless you take action. That's not living in freedom.
That's really, really important information. That's really, really important information and a great analogy. You know, speaking of freedom, you know, the United Nations is now making a plan to make the world healthy again. I mean, when you sent me that, my brain just rattled. I mean, what does the UN ever do for us? You know, they want to prevent non-communicable diseases such as chronic illnesses and give 150 million people more access to mental health services. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Why is the UN sticking its nose in every area of our life?
Well, you know, I can make guesses here, right? I don't have their documents. I don't know what their discussions were, right? But they want to be global, and they want global control. And of course, the World Health Organization is all wrapped in here. And Trump has taken us out of the World Health Organization, or at least begun the process. I think we'll be out, you know, it's another few months before we're actually out. And so maybe the UN wants to just add something else to their agenda that we, the taxpayers, would have to pay for, you know, called Make the World Healthy Again, or that they would get other people to pay for, because maybe they're concerned that Trump will, you know, jettison us from the UN. So I have no idea. But the fact of the matter is, the whole initiative is ridiculous, because they're talking about making sure we don't get non-communicable diseases, right? So making sure people don't get diabetes, making sure people don't maybe get eye disease or sinus infections can be communicable or not, but not totally communicable, but you know what I'm saying, because you're a physician. So the bacteria, but just so many other conditions of every system of your body, of your skin, of everything. They want to make sure that we don't get non-communicable. So what that really means is intrusive in your life and your lifestyle and your DNA. Because some people just have, genetically, they're just, susceptible to certain conditions. But interestingly enough, they didn't say anything here about making sure you didn't get more susceptible by getting COVID shots, right? Because those COVID shots, cancer is not a communicable disease, but we get all this cancer, because of the shots, which is typically what more people are saying today, that these turbo cancers are likely to come from the shots because they started in 2021, 2022, and they're in young people like they never were before. But you don't see that, make the world healthy again, but you don't see that where it says we're going to make sure that nobody has to get the COVID shot so that we can prevent cancer. So it's all just a big political agenda looking for more money, I think, and control.
Yeah, it makes them sound like they're doing something good for the globe, right?
Yes.
Man, it's disgusting. Well, let's just let that settle in for just a minute. We're going to take a really quick break. Today, we're talking to Twyla Braze, the president and co-founder on Citizens Council for Health Freedom and the champion to get rid of the real ID. She is out there fighting these battles for you. We're going to take a quick break. We have more to come. We want to talk about these turbo cancers and something called Pop ID. We'll be right back. We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's such a pleasure, Twyla, to have you come here every month. You know, one of the things that has come up is that healthcare costs for families are still rising. You know, nothing has made that stop. And that in 2025, the healthcare cost for a family of four with employer-sponsored coverage is about $35,000 for that family. And healthcare costs for the average person has increased from about $7,300 in 2024 to $7,900 in 2025. First, what is driving those costs, number one? And number two, where is this leading us?
So I would like to say that I believe that what's driving those costs is third-party payment of care and coverage. And so as well as the fact that all of these employees have employer-sponsored coverage, which again is third-party coverage, right? But the employer-sponsored health insurance issue is probably one of the hugest problems in the country. Because what it really did was it took a bunch of people and made them captives. It captured them into a group. And then your listeners may remember when they used to have 15 or 20 different insurance options if you joined a company with health insurance. And now typically there is one. And either it is a health insurance company that the employer has purchased for a per member per month, or a premium per month for the whole group, or the employer is using its own bank account and it's self-funding its insurance, but it's having a health plan do the administration of that. Either way, what we have here are captive groups all around the country caught in employer-sponsored coverage, not realizing that this is a major theft of their income, because you said that number, $35,000. Well, that's cumulative for the premium, the deductible, the cash payments. All of that is included in that. I'd like to know what else anybody spends $35,000 for their family on that isn't sticking with them for a long time, like a great car, or, you know, the down payment to a cabin, or, you know, whatever, $35,000, but it's gone every year. It is gone at the end of the year. And for most people, most employees, they haven't used hardly a whit of it, but they paid all this money. And all of this is their compensation. And I like to say that you should have every dime of your compensation, and then you should pay for health insurance. And I think we would bring real health insurance back if that was the case, because the health plans are not real health insurance and they're very pricey. Real health insurance is only for insurable and catastrophic conditions, the things nobody ever wants to have, the things most people never have happen to them, the car crash, the coma, the cancer, you know. And if you can just put your health insurance policy into a drawer and forget about it and pay all of the others in first dollar cash payments, all of those payments will come down, all the prices will be transparent, and then that very inexpensive insurance policy will sit there in your drawer until you really need it. And then you'll probably have so much more money in your pocket as a result of having a real insurance policy. So the problem with employer-sponsored coverage is these are all health plans, and health plans that demand from the employer a certain amount per employee per month. And then they have the right to deny access to the care to the employee because they're a health plan. They don't have a contract with you. They have a contract with your employer. And because of the Affordable Care Act, there's fewer and fewer and fewer of those health plans even around. So they basically tell your employer what the employer must pay to give you this benefit. And this benefit is being paid for by you, the worker. It's not being paid for by the employer, because imagine if the employer actually gave you all that money. I think it was in 2023 where the average amount that an employer paid for a family of four was $17,000, and the individual worker paid six. And so the whole cost was almost $24,000. So just imagine if for your family of four, you had $24,000 extra in your pocket, and you could go out and buy a real health insurance company that had a real low premium because it had a high deductible. And it only paid for catastrophic and insurable events. That's where we have to go to in this country. But because we haven't, this is the kind of system we're in. It's legalized theft against the employee, but in the pockets of the health plans.
I totally agree with that. You know, the idea of just being able to get, which I think most families and particularly young people want, is just, I want to buy a plan that covers me for those one-off things.
Yeah,
I fall off the ladder and break my back. I get hit in a head-on collision in a car. You know, I end up with a catastrophic illness like cancer. I don't want to have coverage for every earache, sore throat, or whatever. You know, you and I have been saying for years that if homeowners insurance paid for every leaky faucet and every toilet, you know, handle, every repair of every light switch that you have, it would be absolutely cost prohibitive, because so many of those things, you can go to Home Depot or you can hire somebody because they're one-offs and you can just pay for it. The same thing when you go to the doctor and you can just pay for the office visit and the vitamin that you're going to get and the subscription and go about your life. And so this is really, really a terrible thing, and it needs to get fixed, because there are a lot of young people that are now getting cancers. You know, the turbo cancer uptick, you know, Brian Hooker, who's a, you know, a friend of both of ours, he works for Children Health Defense. He worked with the Department of Defense Epidemiological System, the DMAT system, and found a 40% uptick in cancer starting in 2021. You know, I wrote one of the presentations that I'm doing because I'm promoting my new book, which is Zero Accountability in a Failed System. I found a list of the seven different things that this was a list of seven things of what the COVID jabs have done to our DNA. and how and what they have done to our immune system to increase these turbo cancers. So this isn't going away anytime soon. And even Yale News reports a spike protein in tissues more than 700 days after their last shot. So are we ever going to be able to get rid of these COVID jabs and this COVID, this mRNA technology platforms? And now that they want to release the SA, the self-amplifying RNA, it's going to be even worse. What can we do, we the people do, to force this to get to stop?
Well, I will say that the Trump administration just canceled their contract of a little bit less than $800 million to create an mRNA version of the flu vaccine, if I recall correctly. And so so they've decided that that is not worth the money. And that's probably making Moderna worried, because Moderna, you know, one of the COVID shot manufacturers, their stock just plummeted, you know, when people started refusing the shot after they were seeing all of the injuries, right? And Moderna starts with the word M. And if you just spell it out, M-O-D-E-R-N-A. Right? RNA. So mRNA, that's their whole business model. So getting rid of any government money for these COVID shots or any kind of other mRNA shots is really wise. I think it'll be interesting to see what RFK does. And I don't know if they're treating this sort of tentatively, because they haven't banned it yet, right? And some of the language has been kind of wishy-washy. And well, they should have banned it.
My issue isn't really with RFK about this. My issue is with Makary. I don't trust him, and I don't think he's going to do anything different at the FDA that hasn't been done in the last 20 years. He's going to be a yes man and a stamper and move things on through. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that I will come back someday and say, you know what? I was wrong about him. I was wrong about what he did. I really hope to be wrong about that. But, you know, when Secretary Kennedy threw up that little trial, I look at it now retrospectively as a trial balloon. When he said, okay, we're going to take the mRNA vaccines off the schedule for healthy kids, and we're not going to give them, I'm not going to advocate them anymore for pregnant women. And everybody on the health freedom side went, what? They need to ban all of it, like get rid of it. It's done. It has to be over. I look at it now that was a bit of a trial balloon, because remember, 20% of the country is still getting every COVID booster that they can get their hands on. 20%. And probably 40 to 50% of the country still believes in safe and effective. Whether they believe in the COVID jab, they still believe in that for the rest of the 17 injections on the pediatric poisoning schedule. You know, they still believe in that. And so if suddenly, you know, Secretary Kennedy and whole troop of people walked in there and slash and burn and just got rid of all of it, it would be like almost civil war. What do you mean you're taking away my vaccines? So I think those little things that he did, he wanted to as a trial balloon to see what would happen. And mm-hmm. our people went up in a roar, and so did the other side. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics said, what do you mean we can't give this to kids? And the American College of Obstetric and Gynecology said, what do you mean we can't give this to pregnant women? And we're going to get the AMA and all these other people to investigate you for taking away our life-saving vaccines. And it was like, and all he did was this a little poof. And so it has to be poof, 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 poof. We have to keep on it. And it has to be incremental, because if they did it all in one big explosion, it would be one big explosion. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, because there's too many people still afraid. Just today, even in the heat of Minnesota, I was walking into a building and I watched a guy get out of his vehicle, put on his N95 mask, two straps, really secure, and walk into the building. And I thought, really? But he's obviously scared. He's obviously believes it protects him from something that he's afraid of. So you're right. So it's sort of like we've tipped the scale. like during COVID, there were the 25% of us who said, oh, no, we're not going to do that, right? And then there was this whole middle 50% who were going basically along with it, but they weren't totally sure. And then there was the 25% who were all in, scared to death, right? So now we've got the only 25% all in, scared to death, and this other who won't, and lots of people in the middle who are refusing. But still, this 25% is there, and they're a big and vocal 25%.
And loud.
But they should be bringing out more things about the dangers. I think the dangers, and about the studies and the real studies of what has happened. And so I hope that by the time, that's what I'm saying, is I hope that by the time that this term is over, or not even that long, but you know, that we will have seen that there's lots of studies showing about mRNA and about the COVID shot and the turbo cancers and, you know, people who are suffering long term and people whose lives have changed forever. Some of them aren't even in the books, right? They just know that their whole lives changed after they got the shot, and they're still impacted, but they haven't really gone to do anything about it, right?
Yeah, the list of seven things that I found from the medical literature that show the problems that the spike protein and the lipid nanoparticles and all the rest of the garbage in there actually did, you know, one of them is called insertional mutagenesis, where because of the way that the lipid nano, this was all contrived, they were all made this way, because of the lipid nanoparticle, it helped to insert that foreign protein into our DNA randomly. That's why they call it insertional mutagenesis. And then it disrupted our toll-like receptors and a whole bunch of other different types of genetic things, like our P53 system. Our P53 system is the one that keeps all the cancers in check, you know, because we all make cancer cells every day. And what this does is it eliminates the P53 system. So all these little cancers that we all make every day just sort of flourish, in addition to the turbo cancers. And those are the four I can think of off the top of my head. But that's, I just, the reason I'm saying that is that this is the reason why, when people say, I made a mistake, how do I get this out of my body? Why it's so difficult to just say, here's the magic pill that will fix all this, because we don't know how to unwind all those terrible things that happened to us through these shots. There's no real experimentation. They're not really looking at drugs or supplements or vitamins or any of those things to undo all this intrinsic cellular damage. And that's why it's not an easy answer. And I get asked this all the time, and I'm sure you do too. You know, what do I do to detox this from my system? How do I get this out? I don't know. Because of the disruption.
Yeah, and I think if we had real scientists looking with in earnestness to figure this all out, we would be in a much better place. But we do have scientists like physician Dr. Mary Talley Bowden, who just took a look at her patients, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, and she put it in a tweet. And what a difference it is between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated when it has to do with the, this was the antibody level, right? Yeah, the antibody levels, right? Because I think for the unvaccinated, it's not going to be totally correct because I'm not looking at the statistics, but for the unvaccinated, it was something like 3% to 1,000, I think. But for the vaccinated, it started at 300% and went up to more than 25,000. And now this is months, if not years, after they were vaccinated. And so with that Yale study, which says that, you know, past over 700 days later, they still have the spike protein. It all reminds me of when I learned that there was no kill switch. No kill switch. So nobody has any idea. Yeah. So, you know, nobody has any idea, like, how long does it continue to produce spike protein and in whose bodies? And is somebody's shorter, somebody's longer, or somebody's just gets killed? I don't have any idea. And I don't think anybody else does. And nobody's really looking. The people who should be looking, and I think maybe NIH will do this. We can hope that Dr. Bhattacharya will start getting some science on this happening at the government level, since we, you know, all that money is sitting there. You know, do it to help the American people and all of those who are suffering, because we don't even know what we've really got.
Yeah, I mean, that was the way that they were designed when they put that pseudouridyl at the terminal nucleic acid so that you could just keep doing it over and over and over again. It's like it has an on switch but no off switch.
Right.
So you continue to make these spike proteins, which make the antibody levels continue to go higher and higher.
And did they tell that to anybody? No, there was no informed consent about this. If anybody had been told that we don't actually have an off switch, so we don't know when the spike protein that your body will be producing, we have no idea when it will stop producing it. Now, do you want to get it? Because we have no idea how or when or
Well,
if
and
it's
not
off.
only do we not know when it's going to stop, we don't even know yet when we were given these shots what it's going to do in your body. You know, we
No.
don't even know. We didn't know about the myocarditis and the pericarditis and the turbo cancers and the renal failure and the lung conditions and the depression, anxiety, and all the things that in the Alzheimer, all the things that happen in the brain. That big study that came out of South Korea that looked at 22 million people and looked at all of the brain injury and all the brain dementia and Alzheimer's and all those different things that came out of it. I mean, we had no idea. We just did it. Which is another thing that's coming up that we don't know anything about, which is this pop ID. What is pop ID that got equity financing to build global biometric networks and infrastructure? What is that all about?
Yeah, so these different financial entities like PayPal and then the digital sort of the digital industry and the finance industry getting together trying to make sure that there are biometrics included with payments. And so I wrote something here to just make sure because it's a little convoluted, but the partnership is for the creation of biometric modules consisting of biometric sensors and software to allow existing Verifone, that's one of the corporations, or third-party payment terminals to accept palm and face authentication. So this is, in short, the movement of digital and payment industry into biometrics. And I think I may or may not have mentioned the company IDEMIA, which has this $46 million contract with the TSA to move all of us into real ID to do those pictures at the airport and to use biometrics for access control to commercial flight. And it just means that they want to map your body and the parts of your body, put them in a database and use them for their control. And everybody should start to think about that. Do you believe the government or corporations have the right to collect and categorize and you according to your biometrics, the coordinates of your body in their databases for their control, their identification, their surveillance? This is what's happening, and people are just like blindly, they're like, oh yeah, put my thumbprint on the phone, I'll just look in into that camera at the airport. Well, one, you have to understand that the camera at the airport, they say that you can opt out. But what I believe that they're doing right now is they're training their systems. So they're comparing your ID with your photo as you stand in front of them. And you know that they really want to do this because in Newark is the first place that I saw lights. So they had flat lights about this round. And so when you stepped in front of the camera, which I didn't do, when people stepped in front of the camera, the light would lit up. So it would light up their whole face. They really want to capture the 50 points. It's either 50 or 52 points that they say they need between your ears in order to be able to identify you by your face. And so that's a movement here. It's toward augmented authentication, as IDEMIA calls it, where you don't have to produce any papers. Your body is your ID. Your body, which you cannot change, is your ID. And then they will be able to track, surveil, control, sort of wherever you are, because you have your phone with you and you have your face with you, right? Got your fingers, face, and your gait. You have your phone with you, your face with you, and then you have how you walk. And there, people who collect biometrics also capture people's gait.
You know, it reminds me, I'm sure that people, I'm not a big movie watcher, but I can think of a few television shows and things that had all of this whole thing that was all predictive programming of telling this where this whole thing was going. You know, Twyla, we're down to the last few minutes here, and I really want you to talk about your 2025 gala, what it's going to be, where is it, how people can register, and you announced that Dr. Lee Merritt is going to be your featured speaker. So why don't you talk a little bit about your gala and how people can get tickets and support your event?
So the CCHF gala is being held on September 18th. Of this year, that's a Thursday in Minneapolis, but it's actually just right next to the airport, and the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, and it is our biggest fundraiser of the year. I believe that the page is going up on the what day is today? I believe the page is going up on the 24th or 25th of June for people to register. And we do have an early bird special, so that would be great for people who want to come and want to have it at just a little bit of a lower price. But Dr. Lee Merritt will be here as our guest speaker. The event is called Escaping the Medical Matrix. And she will talk about, you know, essentially the net that's going around doctors, around the patients, around the exam rooms, you know, to keep us all under control and under surveillance, and how we're all being profiled and how to escape it. So she is just a very dynamic speaker, and totally sold out to freedom, and has been, you know, for as long as I have known her. So I do encourage people to come again Thursday, September 18th, just outside of the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport in Bloomington, Minnesota.
Very cool. And where can people go to buy a ticket? And
For that, they can go to cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org. And I do believe, again, that that page is going up on the 24th or 25th of June. So just like, you know, imminently.
And the event, again, what day is it on?
Thursday, September 18th.
Okay.
And it's a dinner. It's a dinner event. So
it's a dinner event. So everybody mark your calendars. And will this be live casted? Will people be able to watch it online? No. You actually have to be there, which is even better. Okay. Yeah. Anything else? We've got a couple of minutes left. Anything else you want to touch on before we close out for this month? And I can't wait till next month, because you always bring us so much great information.
Well, I guess I'll just, because Real ID is the thing that we're really trying to push now. People think, okay, we've passed the May 7th deadline, you know, whatever is, and that's not true. That's not true. This is an entire engagement campaign to get you to turn this around. So go to refuserealid.org, refuserealid.org, and we've got some great handouts, including 10 reasons why to refuse, and how you can make the switch back to a standard state driver's license. And I just think it's so important for people to understand how to talk about Real ID. Real ID is a federal ID for a national surveillance and tracking system. It is an internal passport that will that lays the framework for a social credit system in America, just like the one in China, something that we absolutely do not want. So please engage everybody, you know, invite us to speak wherever you are. We have to get people to understand what this is and to help us shut it down.
Absolutely. And that's refuserealid.org.
Correct.
So everybody write that down. Go print out some of those wonderful handouts that are there. Pass them out to your people in your church, at your gym, you know, the different places where you walk your dog, you see people, like, pass it out so that everybody can have access to that. Well, Twyla, thank you again so much. It's been another great session that we've had together. And as we close out today, I want to say a special thank you for everyone who comes to us and watches This Week with Dr. T, and all you Tenpenny Prime members. We're so grateful for all of you. And for those of you who aren't Tenpenny Prime members, we know you will be. So we thank you so much in advance for becoming a Tenpenny Prime member with us. So with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope. We have a lot of hopeful things to rejoicing about. Be patient in trouble, because trouble will come. And be persistent in prayer, because God tells us to pray without ceasing. So until the next time, remember to lean into Him. He will not let you down. Twyla, thank you again so much for being here. And for all the rest of you, we'll see you same place, same time next week, Monday morning, 11 a.m., This Week with Dr. T. Have a good week, everybody. Goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.